This is WKSU News. I'm ML Schulze. Nearly 60 years ago, mental health treatment began its move from massive warehouses like the old Massillon State Hospital to community-based care. But the path to effective treatment continues to face challenges, from old stereotypes to new medications. In the third installment of our series, Navigating the Path to Mental Health, we explore the evolution among providers, advocates, and patients.
You're going to put cherries on top?
Yeah, that's what I called for.
Diane Mang and her mother Peggy are preparing the cheesecake brownies for the regular bingo crowd at the Knights of Columbus Hall in Massillon. The relationship is easy and open, built on the love since the Mangs adopted their baby girl in 1972. But Diane acknowledges it wasn't always that way.
I thought I was going to die. And they put me in five-point straps, both feet, both wrists, and your forehead were strapped to the bed.
That was 1992. Diane was 19 and had been studying aerospace engineering in college. When things were good, she zoomed through classes and activities. When things were bad, she couldn't get out of bed. And when they were really bad, she attempted suicide. Her parents had brought Diane home and to a psychiatrist. From there, they went to the psych ward at Mercy Medical Center. For a tour, Diane thought. For a solution, her mother hoped.
I wanted to get her help and I knew she needed it. And I was so happy we could get her to someplace.
Instead, Peggy says, it was horrific. Diane was committed and put on high-dose antidepressants, which accelerates mania in what turned out to be bipolar disorder. She tore her room apart, trying to escape Satan, and gouged her wrist with a broken cassette cartridge. It took 2 years, nearly a dozen hospitalizations, and an overheard conversation to find a doctor who specialized in bipolar disorder. He enrolled Diane in a national study, put her on a mood stabilizer, and made a connection with the right therapist. She graduated from Kent State in 2001. The hospitalizations weren't over, but her mom, Peggy, says she knew the mean disease had not won.
And I loved her so much from day one. Could never, ever let anything happen to her.
On a broader scale, there are also signs of progress, with big caveats. The Affordable Care Act expanded behavioral health care, though public dollars are scarce. There are new medications. And though there's an acute shortage of psychiatrists, primary care doctors are getting more mental health training. Nurse practitioners coordinate primary and behavioral care. Community pharmacists, when not squeezed by insurance requirements for lower-cost mail order, monitor patients. And peer groups and even apps provide support.
So mortars and pestles.
Sarah Dugan, a mental health pharmacist at the Northeast Ohio Medical University, says psychotropic medications remain a crucial first-line tool that transforms lives. But they can be costly, have serious side effects, and pretty abruptly stop working, all of which providers need to discuss with their patients.
Because if we find a great medicine that works, but they're going to be unwilling to take it because of the side effects they get, then we're still at square one.
Dugan says best practice now for people experiencing their first psychotic episode is, whatever the medication, low dosages.
Lowering the dose of these medicines in some patients may actually help them reach functional recovery, so where they're able to be engaged in those activities that they want to be engaged in their everyday life.
But perhaps the biggest change in the mental health field is not limited to mental health. It's called motivational interviewing. Doctors trained to ask questions in a non-judgmental way, valuing the responses and starting a conversation, not a lecture. Russell Spieth works on mental health issues with people ranging from chronically homeless to college students. He's running through a short version of motivational interviewing with Venkat Dandapu, a first-year NeoMed medical student.
That's a nice way to engage you as opposed to just sort of, like you said, using a bias and moving in one direction.
Oh, absolutely.
Spieth acknowledges time is tight in medicine these days, but demonstrates how the technique can make the most of what time there is.
Okay, we've been talking about antidepressants for the past 5 minutes. What do you think you're going to do when you leave here?
Okay.
The question allows the patient to have the opportunity to talk themselves into change. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go to CVS and fill this prescription and start taking it. There's research that suggests just stating something like that out loud to another person makes it more likely that you're going to do it.
As importantly, he says the message behind the question is empowering.
You're my partner. You're a fully functioning person with autonomy. You get to decide what happens.
Spieth says clinical studies show the technique is 75% more effective than traditional doctor's visits. Often, success is measured by getting patients to adhere to their medication. But Spieth says it can also help find a better fit with other therapies, or even help taper someone off medication they believe they no longer need. Ultimately, he says, It can turn the key only the patient holds. He remembers a homeless man with schizophrenia who rejected that diagnosis and medication. But he did talk about sleep problems, which led to music, which led to performing, which led to taking schizophrenia medication for nerves.
He still never endorsed the diagnosis of schizophrenia. He referred to it as nerves. I don't care. Nerves is fine.
Another part of the evolving continuum of mental health care is NAMI. 40 years ago, two mothers whose sons were diagnosed with schizophrenia formed what has become the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Today, its 1,100 affiliates work on education, advocacy, and support, including peer-to-peer and family meetings. The core value is unconditional acceptance. In Stark County, a half dozen NAMI alumni still get together on Friday nights. They include people working in mental health, business people, parents, those with a history of mental illness in their families, and those with none. The diagnoses include bipolar, panic anxiety, schizoaffective, depression. The talk ranges from mindfulness to meds, isolation to inclusion.
I wasn't going to tell anybody because of the fact that I was afraid they were going to lock me up.
I've been over 100 different medication changes. It doesn't make you feel great.
I wanted to be a good parent, but I was also struggling with my own mental illness.
We kind of watch over each other. That's a big thing.
And that takes you out of the anxiety about, you know, the future and the depression in the past. You're just in this space of pure possibility.
Put the cherries so you can put the cherries
yes.
on top?
I would love to put the cherries on top.
For Diane Mang, NAMI was a key piece in the transition from disabling mental illness. She hasn't been hospitalized since 2006 and works with NAMI now, trying to help people learn how to navigate and advocate for their own care and to resist seeing themselves as less than.
I guess I don't think of it as a defect anymore. If I didn't have what I have, I wouldn't be who I am. And I kind of like myself.
Meanwhile, she and her mother, Peggy, prepare the bingo dinner each Monday, celebrate recovery each moment, and even share a favorite song whenever they hear it. I'm M.L. Schulze, 89.7 WKSU.